space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its five-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life, a new civilization, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Greetings, salutations, and welcome to Retrek. I'm Captain Jim. With me, of course, Sir Admiral Elliot.
Hi there.
And Dr. Squee.
Dragon.
And this week, we're here to talk about the latest episode of Lower Decks, Starbase 80, because it has a question mark. Is it? I didn't know.
It's question mark. So it's Starbase 80. Yeah. As a question, what's it about? That it's Starbase 80. Yes, it's a statement.
Right. And then that led us on to Impulse, aka the zombie Vulcan episode of Enterprise, which I won't jump ahead of ourselves, but I had fun with that episode. There's not a lot to talk about because it's so action-packed.
And it's also the fifth episode of a season.
Oh, there we go, you see. We always do these things on purpose. We just have a really good way of making it look like we're disorganized. But before we get to them, there was an unexpected drop of Star Trek content, I suppose, is a way to describe it, which many of you may have already seen, but this was a short film produced by the Roddenberry Archive. They have done one before, which was the Spock on Viridian 3 one. This one's called Unification, and it features kind of the return to Star Trek of William Shatner. Apparently he did do some mocap stuff and facial reference stuff.
Why didn't he have any dialogue then if he was doing that anyway?
I have no idea. It's a strange little film.
I think the biggest thing in it was actually seeing Robin Curtis back as Savick, and they actually had her there because, like, the same William Shatner was there. And I've seen some interviews with him, and he's trying to say, yeah, this is the perfect ending to Kirk, and it's completing the journey. And it's sort of like, if I didn't know it had come from the Roddenberry Archive, I'd have thought a lot of it was bad AI.
Yeah. So for anyone who's not seen it, you know, do go check it out. Don't let us put you off. I think the three of us are roughly in the same place on this.
I was underwhelmed.
I mean, if I can give it, the only thing I can sort of give it is the de-aging was pretty good, like on the faces. They, you know, his different faces looked the age, but as soon as he started moving, like there was one bit was moving where it's like, it looked like someone else had done the body and then they superimposed the head. It just looked really weird. The body wasn't moving in time.
Yeah.
It was just like it felt like they'd spent all their money on the de-aging effect, run out of money to pay Shatner to talk and to like put it together better. It was just shit. I honestly really thought it was because I'd you were the one who mentioned it that I really, you know, you mentioned it to me, Jim, but before that, the only place I'd heard of it was something like Bleeding Cool, one of those that said Shatner reprises his role after all this time, and I thought it was going to be like maybe just a comic or so, you know, they do these bullshit. For whatever reason. And it goes, and it sort of showed some pictures. So it was obviously something new, but I thought it was a fan thing. Honestly, I just thought it was, I couldn't be bothered to read the whole article to discover what it was. So when you said, oh, it's dropped. I still thought it was a fan thing. Really. I was kind of half reading it.
It looked like a fan thing. And in a lot of ways it's like this isn't canon. This is not a new episode of Star Trek. And it's made by people who are involved in the Roddenberry Archive, but it feels more like a tech demo for the de-aging, which I've seen better in films. Like, presumably this had a much lower budget than big Hollywood films, but like this is not the best de-aging.
Yeah, like to me, it was it looks like bad AI. It didn't look like de-aging. It just didn't look right.
Yeah.
And I don't know if the views, if it's actually Shatner who's done all the walking and everything. And let's bear in mind, he's an old man now. He's well in his 90s.
But it didn't look like an old man walk. It just looked unnatural.
Yeah, but I mean, it's because he's trying to mimic something. It didn't look right. The build didn't look right or anything. It looked. I'm trying to explain that. It just didn't.
Yeah, I don't think it's Shannon. I reckon it someone else has done the movement and they've tried to do a walk to match his head, and that's why it looks so funny. Either that or they've just completely composited it, and that's why it looks shit.
And, like, to move away from the technology of it all, but if it's trying to tell a coherent story, I don't get it. Like, it's got, you see a bit of Gary Mitchell's in there, Yeoman Colt from The Cage is in there. There's a flash of Kirk's body in the Daystrom thing from Picard. So are they getting at somehow Kirk's been resurrected?
I think it's his life flashing before his eyes. That's where you get a quick burst of loads of images. Yeah. And then you kind of get this journey thing. And that's why he's by Spock's eye, because I think that's when Spock... I think it's just meant to be him going to the afterlife and then stopping by Spock for whatever reason.
But then there's the Beetlejuicean time soldier who was in Discovery, who we know from the Kelvin universe, and he gives Kirk his com badge back. So does somehow he take him to the Kelvin timeline so that he can witness the death of Spock? Like, I don't get it.
Very, I think it I do was not very get messed it. Up.
Yeah,
I'm not... Spock was in the Kelvin timeline when he died, so that kind of fits the narrative of the afterlife.
Sort of,
yeah. And the other guy's dead, isn't he? So,
I think they were trying to be very cerebral and clever with themselves, and I think they've gone OTT. They're trying to do an afterlife thing, but
I mean, maybe because they seem to release one of these every so often. Maybe eventually it'll all fit together, and we'll go, "Wow!"
Yeah,
but not yet. Anyway, back to Lower Decks then. We finally get to go to Starbase 80 after all the references to it. And it's almost like being built up as like a big bad of Lower Decks. And we finally go there this time. I thought it was fun. We were talking last week, is this going to be... a plot arc heavy episode, or is it going to ignore the anomalies completely? And it ignores them completely.
Yeah. Which is very Lower Decks of itself to do that midway through.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's usually by and large one standalone, you know, or one which is very light on the ongoing thing.
I'd say this was completely...
Yeah, I can't
ignored it. But
unless they do a Lower Decks kind of like, it turns out there was stuff in here which relate, or you know, the
possibly, yeah, they might do that
somehow, you know. But failing that, no, there's nothing.
Yeah, really, right?
Yeah.
But and really good episode. Fun episode.
Yeah, it was great and, fun.
And I know we've chosen what episode we've chosen, but you could have chosen a half a dozen episodes very easily.
Yes, they had a lot more. We've struggled a little bit so far this season, but this one seems to make up for a lot of it.
And they're showing a lot of, like, one of my kind of complaints from previous series was that Mariner, after a while, seemed to be treading the same ground a lot of episodes with the same thing of, like, oh, I'm about to get promotion, so I'm going to rebel, and then I'm going to realize that I want, like, actually to play a lot. You know, they've gone over that several times. So it's just really nice. Like, they've already had Boimler this series willing to break the rules because he's evolving, and her ready to follow that. And it's just nice. I maybe think you could have peppered in a bit sooner, but I'm glad they're doing it now in the last series. Yeah, obviously.
Yeah.
They need to do it now if they're going to.
I think that's also, like, we're getting it now in this last season, but I don't think, like, Mike McMahon?
Yeah.
Yeah. Had any intention of this ending after five seasons, and I don't think anyone expected Paramount Plus to be that stupid. to end it after five seasons.
I mean, I don't know where the writing process was when they got cancelled, but I know, like, the last episode is a purposely written one, I believe.
I think it was between season four and five that they got cancelled. I didn't know until after season four.
So you probably got
season four.
You probably got the main arc of this series was already decided, and a lot of the plots were worked out, and then they've adapted it. So we'll never know if, like, some of this stuff was in there, some of it wasn't. I think it's certainly a lot of adapted scripts, you know, at least 50%.
Yeah.
Usually by the time the last one's airing, the scripts for the next one are already.
Yeah.
I imagine they were thinking that they'd get 10 seasons out of this easy. And there's going to be character development over a lot. That's why we're not getting Rutherford development, because how many characters can you have massive development in 10, 25 minute episodes?
You know, I think it's, I mean, Rutherford, I feel like he's who he wants to be. He just has to realize it and be kind of like,
and get with Tendy.
Get with Tendy, be happy with, you know, realize what he actually wants outside of the things which he's already content with, because he's so content with life, he doesn't realize where he's not, almost.
Then two need to be a couple.
Yeah, but that'd be a nice, like, he hasn't got too far to go to be completely Rutherford. It would only be, basically, get with Tendy, be happy, you're good. You know, everything else you're already happy about.
Yeah, I think we're going to leave the characters in a nice place, but... Yeah. And I think the lesson to be learned is, if you're the showrunner on a streaming Trek show now, just hedge your bets that you'll probably only get five seasons if the evidence we've had so far is anything to go
by. Let's also be fair that it's not just Trek shows on streaming platforms. You have to be planning these things that they might only get one season.
Absolutely, or two seasons,
because there's so many like that. There's so many good shows that I know that I have watched and I'm disappointed because I never got a second season and there's stories hanging. And then there's so many shows that have been cancelled that I've not even gone to watch them, because what's the point?
Yeah, that's the problem.
Yeah, I think Strange New Worlds probably going to break that trend. I think, you know.
Hopefully,
It'll probably even out with Prodigy, maybe.
I think Strange New Worlds is going to get five seasons, because it's perfect for the five-year mission.
Yeah, that's true. It does have a natural... And
I've said that all the way. It fits to have five seasons.
Mm. Having said that, though, when it's the kind of one which seems to be broken through the most, you know, even though we know it fits five seasons perfectly, they'll make an excuse to add a couple more if they want to.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They've not specifically said this is 5 years before TOS, so there's a bit of wiggle room in there.
Doesn't their crew have Pike have a couple of five-year missions? Evil had one before originally. Well, in the original,
there's room.
It's always been a bit sort of...
Yeah.
There's more room for wiggle room than there is some with Kirk's journey. We know.
So yes, the dolphins get zapped.
Oh my god! Like, no trigger warning, nothing before this. I mean, just fucking hell. Like, you know, kill all the humans, but the dolphins, don't fuck with them without.
They don't die.
Now, yeah, are the dolphins? Are the whales?
They do say whales, but I'm calling them dolphins because they look like dolphins.
Yeah, I think the whales.
The dolph whales.
Yeah, maybe the little whales, but okay. The dolphales get zapped.
Yeah, not in favour.
And they have to go to Starbase 18. You get this thing where Mariner screams. And it's really good because, like, Mariner screams and sort of kneels down screaming, no! And that's where the credits should kick in. But they don't, and they let it live a couple more beats, and it's like, are you going to do that all the way there? And so, that was fun. That was playing with the conventions of TV a bit.
Again, going along with the whole thing of kind of character development as well, it's just nice to... It's not really character development, but it's nice when you see a character paving out sorts a bit kind of fits. So it's like, Mariner usually being brave and in charge and everything, and then just she's shitting herself at the Starbase because of a curse. Because, like, you feel like she's so much in charge, but she would probably believe in a curse as well.
Yes. Because that's the thing. She's always talking. She's talking about how it's cursed and everything, and she tries to get out of going on the mission. But when they get there, they have to do the decontamination gel, which, yes, we could have watched just about any episode of Enterprise, for particularly in season three.
And strangely enough, I think we've picked one of the few episodes of season three, even though it's disease-ridden, that hasn't got the gel.
Yeah, it's true. Because that was the thing we said, oh, well, if we pick this one, it's probably got the gel. We didn't check first.
And that's why they got infected, no gel. But one thing I was going to check on this, because I know we like to keep a check of these kind of when they do references in character. So they go, oh, is this going to be like a Corbinite maneuver, which, you know, but they'll say the thing. Yeah. Here, I don't think there's much in plot excuse for why he goes, hey, look at me, just like T'Pol. Like, T'Pol's very specific. I think that's like, that. I don't know. Like, usually it's fourth wall breaking with a weak excuse why you can say,
maybe it's that thing that by season three, they decided T'Pol was the sex object. And there was almost an excuse every episode to get her stripped down and rubbing lube all over herself.
In episode one, they decided that. Well, that's in series three. Like,
but they do it. They do it a lot.
Series three,
I thought they did from the get go, but yeah.
But and that's why I think Boimler knows about it. I think Trip and T'Pol and their oil gel sessions have become famous in Starfleet over the years. I reckon there's books and films and all sorts,
and Ransom is just awesome with the, like, oh, I love this gel more.
Yeah, Ransom loves it.
Of course he really is the Kirk here.
Yeah, and then we meet our liaison, who's wearing an Enterprise uniform. So that's
this pretty much cemented we have to go to Enterprise.
Yeah. The gravity changes in the engine room and they go up like a fireman's pole. And I read in one of these like trivia articles over the week that apparently that was originally part of like somebody's concept drawing, was that there would be a fireman's pole down to the engine room. And so they've sort of, yeah, it's a bit of a nudge, nudge, wink, wink to unused concepts there. So that was good fun as well. And there's a corn dog guy, just a guy selling corn dogs down in the engine thing.
I was about to say with engineering, I like that they've got bits of modern stuff, but they've still got like TOS era work units. They're showing that it's a neglected starbase. It's been that this is obviously a really, really old starbase. And it's just patched up and never been properly. It's instead of having a full refurb, it's sort of like you know how a pub would have a pub and they have massive refurbs and they rip out the inside and they move the bar and there's all decorated and new walls go up and it completely changes. And then you hear other pubs you go into and they go, we're having a refurb, we're shut. And you go back in 2 months later and it's had a lick of paint. And this is that. It's had a lick of paint refurb.
Yeah. I'll say it quickly and then. The station in Cross Gates that me and Elliot have been known to frequent now and again, but not often recently, they shut once for like a month. And they put new curtains up and vacuumed, and that were it.
Yeah, no, but it did take a lot of work, did vacuum in that place.
True.
it was a mess.
I mean, just quickly, because you brought me down this road now. It's a nightclub, which I used to go to, called the Nexus, which is a rock club in Southampton.
Ooh, good name.
Oh, God. You would, your feet would, like, stick to the carpet, like, all throughout. And it's like... And you'd lament it and you go, for fuck's sake, can they not just do something about this? When they replaced the carpet, they kind of did the place up, lost all its charm. So, like, just be careful what you wish for. But I was going to say,
the mark of a good rock club is that your shoes stick to the floor.
Yeah, never question it. But when we're looking around the station, it's kind of funny because what it made me think is, like, I get why Strange New Worlds, they've got to live on this set every week, but they've redone the Enterprise, like, I'm sure there'll be an excuse near the end where they go, oh, we're going to do a refit to this kind of like retro look or whatever. There'll be some reason for changing it, I'm sure, at the end. But it's kind of funny where they're set in the Enterprise every week. And this gave me the nostalgia for the classic Enterprise.
It's yes.
Kind of, yeah.
I've got a feeling that they're going to leave the Enterprise interiors as they are because they're close enough to the original series, but they needed to have sort of modern day sensibilities looked at it, applied to it. Like what when they did it in the 60s, that looks really futuristic. Now it doesn't so much with things we've got.
All I meant was if they're going to do it, they'll do it as a nod in the last episode. It's like, we're doing a refit to make it look like this. That looks a bit old, you know, a bit clunky and everything. No, I love it. And they might make a joke kind of reference, but I think that's the most.
I could see them going either way with it, to be honest.
I assume we're meant to see it as the Enterprise.
Because we all said that when we first saw it in Discovery, didn't we? We went, you can see it's modernised, but they've kept the same aspect and all that.
It was still the Enterprise.
It wasn't like the Calvin movies where it was completely different. It just all white. This felt a bit more true. I liked it.
So they meet Gene, who's clearly Gene Roddenberry, which
Pop Scotty with his waistcoat.
Yes,
love that.
It just seems. I don't know. It's Lower Decks having a Gene Roddenberry character makes perfect sense, but. It's just a very sort of unassuming episode and an unassuming role to put him in. It feels like it's almost like the ultimate Easter egg that they could have mined. And it's just like, why now? Why here? Why now? I have no problem with it.
I've got a theory on this. I wonder if he's being put in. They've made the character called Gene once they found out that they're being cancelled. Because all they keep saying is, I need you guys to fix what's wrong. So it's sort of like, no, you need to keep Lower Decks to keep it, to make Star Trek
I like that theory. I mean,
I like that.
I don't know if they thought of that, but I like it. I mean, my personal theory was that I think Gene obviously is a tribute to Gene Roddenberry. I didn't think he was character. Like, I mean, obviously there's only so many interview things with Gene Roddenberry, but I didn't think the character was necessarily meant to be him. I felt it was kind of a nod to him, but it was like and I think a lot about it reminded me of all those kind of character actors who are always in Star Trek, especially the original series and Next Generation. Actually, I say that I just think back to the original series when you had so many guests of the week which were classic actors which kind of spoke a bit like he did, and they were a lot of the time older ones, and it felt like that to me. That's the nod I got from it.
I mean, it looks like him though. So, you know, it's...
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think it's just the name.
But not in the likeness, but not necessarily in the character.
The character's not necessarily. I just wonder, I would like to know what the thought process was. Like, let's put Gene Roddenberry in this episode.
Wasn't it a recognised name who played him as well?
I'm not sure off the top of my head.
I'll bring it up.
So they're all turning into zombies, basically. And there's a cool bit where you get a zombie come out and it sort of licks the fireman's pole, but then the gravity catches it and it gets yoinked up the screen. That was good fun. And then speaking of sort of posh guest stars who turn up, we get this British doctor who turns up.
Stephen Root, if you don't recognise the name, look him up. You'll recognise the guy. So I'm trying to get up a pitch now. Don't know if you can see that at all. He's been in like a million things.
It's not coming across. Oh, right. Yes. Okay.
Like you can't see the wrinkles. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's probably the best you're going to get from there. But yeah, if you look him up, he's been in everything. So again, a classic character actor himself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
More than I'm saying. Yeah. Thanks, Ben.
We've got a message from Rose saying, hey, it's World Beautiful Day. I didn't know it was World Beautiful Day.
Why do you think we're here?
Oh, of course. Sorry. Yes, we did know that. You see, we always plan these things. she says, hello, chaps. Chat, good evening. Hope everyone's keeping warm. Yeah, got the heating on.
Got the heating on and got the Captain Kirk dressing gown on.
A beautiful day despite the weather, yes.
since it's a world beautiful day, Rose, I just want to say I love the kind of you've got flowers in your picture. You're always saying something nice and jolly to us. So thank you for bringing a bit of beauty to us. We appreciate it.
We do.
So the British guy, then, the doctor, he's got half that disease that Geordie gets in that episode.
That same
identity crisis. And we nearly watched that one. That was the other consideration. But yeah. And there's quite a good joke where he says, like, what? How did you know I had that? I'm told it barely even shows.
It's a little bit.
His body.
It's touch noticeable. I like that, yeah.
And then we find out that the liaison woman is actually an Elorian. And Mariner says, so what? You're like 300 years old. So no, I'm in my 30s. That's just a normal person.
I do love the idea that it's like, because I'm a Lorian, we've got more life experience, so that just makes us wiser. Like,
You have more time to learn martial arts or what have you if you're alive for 300 years. And there's this running thread of the need to get to the arcade. And then they get there and there's these guys who go, well, there's no reason for you to be up here unless you're going to the arcade. And they just go, well, we are.
Do you remember that episode where there was the two tribes that were fighting? And there was that woman who had been genetically aged to kill one of the leaders in the war.
Oh,
it's that tribe
who've
got half of Starbase 80, yeah. That's why like gangsters and look like a biker gang.
Ah, I'd not realised who they were meant to be. So I'm going to watch that one.
Which was that?
Is it the Vengeance Factor, TNG?
Riker falls in love with her because obviously Riker used to get off of it.
Yeah, and he ends up like shooting her at the end, doesn't he?
Yeah.
It's like, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And they come up with some deal for how they can do things. And they've got half a Starbase 80 because like they did a deal at some point of the Federation with them over
land,
and the Starbase is bang on the border.
And then. Meanwhile, you've got Captain Freeman and Ransom are fighting bats sort of down in one of the boiler rooms. And she gets all, no, I'm going to defeat these bats. So,
Oh, I just love I love the moment where she turns and it's like, you know what? We're the scrappy crew who no one kind of who gives a fuck about. So we're going to sort you out because you're
going to help you.
And it kind of speaks to, I think that will resonate with a lot of us. This is a compliment for anyone who's new to the show, but nerds. I think like a lot of us nerds and geeks, we do band together. We find our tribe because we're the people who are kind of underestimated, like the good Cerritos crew. That's why we love them, and that's why we love Gene here. And it's just lovely that Gene goes up to that fame.
And I like how he goes, look, I've been sending you all over because I knew you'd fix all the bits that were... You'd stop the alarm going, you'd fix it, you'd fix this on your way.
Yeah.
And it's because I've been asking for... months for some help for repairs.
I bet he even like he was there for ages just surreptitiously putting the drawer on the console just in the right position. He's like, I'm gonna put more work into this than it would take to fix it just so they'll fucking fix something.
And the main plot gets wrapped up pretty quickly. Like they end up, they work out it's the whales / dolphins. And it ends up with the British doctor knocks one of them out with a shovel, and that's how they get the anaphasic life form out of it, which means we could have done Sub Rosa this week as well.
We could have,
but we chose not to for very good reason.
Saving that for a special week.
And that's pretty much it. The anaphasic life form apologizes, like, sorry, I was...
We do find out the anaphasic life form is a lower decker.
Yes.
Sarah, I'm a junior officer. I was trying to impress the senior officers that I could talk to you.
It's just a really, really good, fun episode. We finish with Captain Freeman still fighting the bats. And, that's that. But
and I sort of love the fact that it's in bait, because at the beginning of the episode, they do talk about the fact that oh, because their transporters can't screen stuff, so we have to use the gel. So they've introduced it right at the beginning, and Modex doesn't do that very often, but it was kind of nice, like, they gave away the what was happening right at the beginning, but you don't know until the end. I love that.
And you actually see when every time they use the comm badges, it does a flash of green light and everything.
Yeah.
And it's easy to miss first time round. But it's, exactly. But it's all there.
Also, even be a subtle message in there about kind of Mariner's journey, because like when she does fight the Allurian woman and she just keeps on going, it's like, no, I'm your friend, I'm trying to help you. And she starts explaining it. I feel like an earlier series, Mariner might not have given in. She would have kind of beat it down and only found out at the last minute because she found something.
Yeah, quite possibly.
Right. I just knocked her out for nothing. Whereas here, she stops herself.
Listening. Be,
Sorry. Someone wake her up and apologize for me. I've got to go.
And Rose has got a good question. Did we think the two-sided face on the Doctor looked a bit like Two-Face from Batman?
Yeah.
Maybe if we're talking from the Dark Knight Two-Face.
The Dark Knight, or even the Batman the Animated Series.
No,
where...
I think
a little bit.
No. Well, certainly in premise, I think we agree. But different versions.
In premise,
Good
They should have given him, he could have had a strip of latinum that he kept like flicking.
And definitely not from the Joel Schumacher one, whichever one it was. Was it Batman and what?
Batman Forever was the Tommy Lee Jones.
Yeah.
So basically, Tommy Lee Jones watched the other one and went, oh God, oh yeah, the Joker guy. Yeah, I'll do that.
Yeah, I have tried. No, you just can't forget that, can you?
No, let's not get on the Batman Forever. instead, let's move on to Enterprise then, Impulse. And this is in the early days of the Zindi arc, season 3. And it does, in media res opening, like, starts off straight away with T'Pol shouting she's going to kill everyone. And this actually made... This actually made me go, hang on, as it started playing the episode halfway through, because Paramount Plus sometimes does that.
Well,
so it's not an unreasonable worry.
I was the same, but I was watching on Netflix, and I was thinking, oh, if I stopped this last time I watched it, however long ago it was.
Yeah,
because Netflix does remember where you were up to.
Yeah, it's that immediate how quick it just starts, almost mid-sentence. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
And all I could think of was, I think, James, you brought it up originally, but we've all kind of agreed, there's too much of this shit where they kind of show a bit from the middle of the event, which doesn't really need to be a pre-credit. I felt this falls into that category.
I didn't mind this
the worst offender, but...
Well, this is like right from the very end, didn't it, played at the beginning?
Yeah. Well, we don't actually replay this. This bit sort of happens off screen when we catch up with it, which is weird.
That's true.
Yeah.
And it is totally unnecessary.
And there's no stupid surfing on the back of a spaceship.
There isn't. That's true.
Like, I'm not saying that isn't the worst offender of pretty much anyone, but like, and this isn't the worst, but it's just like, it certainly, I think, falls in that category. I don't think.
It's not necessary. It doesn't add it. If anything, it does detract from the episode because it reduces the peril of, you know, are they going to... I mean, I know we know they're going to escape because it's the main cast, but we're like, well, we've already seen T'Pol and Archer back on the ship, so clearly we get out of this particular scrape.
So you just suddenly... You've taken all the jeopardy out.
Also, I mean, haven't we already... I mean, I know this really hones in on the fact that the Vulcans are particularly affected by this radiation, but I'm sure early on in the series they'd already revealed that the Delphic Expanse has an effect on the mind, I seem to remember.
Yes. Oh, yeah, they established that.
That's why they kind of collect, what's it called, Trinium or something stupid.
Trillium. Well, they're doing that in this episode as well, aren't they?
But it's not like they've got any... Like, you know, so it's not like it's like, oh my God, a mind's effect. I wonder what's happening. Oh, well, the thing they've told us the last four episodes. Right. Okay.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
What's weird as well is it does this, and this is the pre-credits. Then we come back from credits, And instead of going straight into the 2 days earlier or whatever, we have another scene before we do that, which is a little bit strange. It's like, usually if you're going to do that, you have it all in the teaser. And then when we go into the episode proper, it's 1 day earlier or what have you.
Yeah.
But yeah, it just seemed odd that we go back to that before the credit, after the credits, then it's 1 day earlier.
Yeah, yeah. I'd forgotten about that. That was weird.
And Trip's deciding we need a morale boost because nobody wants to go to the cinema anymore.
I mean, I get it. Archer's preoccupied with everything that's happening. I get him saying no to begin with, but when Trip talks him around, he goes like, yeah, that's an excellent choice anyway, fuck that. Yeah, he really just seems disinterested. And then I love the fact that Trip's next line, which I don't know if it's meant to be ironic, but he goes like, yeah, movie night, backed by popular demand. He couldn't give a shit, and you're the only one who wants it. Like, if that line isn't ironic.
Well, it's because he keeps picking weird films, like... I think we'll go with, what is it? Who is it he says they're going to go with? Like, Bing Crosby or something. It's I know it's because it's stuff that they don't have to license or stuff that's in the Paramount archive. But it's always really old films. Why don't they go, right, there's a Paramount film. Why don't you go, I think we'll all get together and watch Top Gun.
Like, what they should be doing... this is a trick that they missed all the way through Star Trek, especially with being Paramount, is whatever Paramount's big movie out at the cinema is what they should say, let's go watch so-and-so. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that was massive in so-and-so.
Yeah,
yeah, I mean, they should do, you're right.
I'm pretty sure the Mission Impossible films that would Sean Connery, apparently, the Mission Impossible films, I'm pretty sure we're already going then, because... They go back to the dawn of time. Like, I think they predate the TV show. They've been going that long with. And also, like, Archer, I think, is a bit of a dick throughout this episode. Because here,
Like,
I mean, I would like to a little bit of a, like, bit more of a wry smile when it's like, that's great. I'm glad you're taking care of that while I don't feel like I can. He, like, a bit more of that. Later on in the episode, he has a, like, Winterpole starts to lose it. He says to her, it's like, yeah, because I need you on my game. Not, how are you? It was like the least Star Trek captain thing.
And he's doing it even earlier in the episode.
It goes really dark in this season, doesn't it?
It does, yeah.
And I think this is, and it's sort of like, I think he's got the whole weight of Earth on his shoulders.
Yeah.
Maybe it goes better in the course of the series.
And when you watch the whole thing, it goes really, really dark.
It does,
stuff he's willing to do.
But like,
maybe because it's only medium dark, I'm not picking up.
It's literally gone. Yeah, it's literally the entire season. Is Cisco pale moon light?
Yeah, true.
What will I do? And he goes, yeah, I'll kill people. I'll blow this up. I'll rob from them. I'll maroon them. I have no problem because I'm saving Earth. I can live with myself. Yeah.
And maybe it is a bit more of a parallel. Now you put it in that context, it's a bit more of a parallel here where he refuses to leave T'Pol, whereas later on he does strand people. It's just in isolation.
But,
it's really, I remember
he's been a dick to T'Pol right from the start. Like, she keeps saying, oh, well, I can do this. And no, you don't need to do that. And I was like, well, hang on, have I forgotten a plot point or something? Is there some reason why T'Pol shouldn't be doing things? But I don't think there is. I think it's just... For some reason, Archer's been a bit of a dick to her.
I think it's that sort of like the bringing on him, getting more and more dickish and more and more.
Yeah, maybe.
And the moving him out, he deliberately comes out of his what character he's had because he was so, this is great. We explorers, let's go meet people.
Yes,
in season one, season two. And then this season, it's like, oh, we need to do this or Earth is destroyed.
Yeah, I mean, if we're watching one of the later episodes, you probably would have had some, because his behavior got a lot darker, you'd have someone going, it's like, well, he's acting a bit weird. Whereas this is early on where they start peppering in. So it just feels weird in isolation. But yeah, we're working the series. I get it. Yeah.
And then once we get to the Vulcan ship, it pretty just becomes like an action horror film.
Let's go a bit back. Because we've got Trip. Decides that they're going to beam in meteors to get Trillium.
Oh, yes.
Now, Someone please explain to this to me. When things start going wrong with the transporter, so we've got the chief engineer stood there,
mm-hmm.
who's got the pilot working the transporter, and when things start to go wrong, the chief engineer asking the pilot, what's wrong with things? How do we make it work? It's just weird.
That's well, true.
Is he manning the... Like, I'm trying to picture, is he looking at the console at this time? Maybe he's just feeding the information. Or
you've literally got Trippy stood off to the side.
Yeah.
So how many you are on the screen?
Yeah.
You're stood off to the side and just chatting away and having a conversation.
Yeah.
And you've got Merriweather is working the transporter, doing all the controls. But then when you've got things start going wrong, Tripp stays stood to the side, asking him what's wrong and how do you fix it?
I mean, it might be nice to be raced back.
And not thinking, hold on, I'm the chief engineer, what can I do?
Well, no, just my theory was like that where he's not in front, like maybe he set everything up. He wants to observe what physically happened so he can observe the thing. So he's put him at the console to operate. So he's asking him like what went wrong as him, what is it telling you? As you know, I don't know.
Expecting it to go wrong. They were just beaming rocks in.
Oh no, but like if he wanted to just observe what, you know, because he knows that the transport is failing. They say that they'd managed to get something of a certain
because they beam the first one in, and then they go, oh, let's beam a bit more in. And
yeah, because he says that's the maximum size they've managed to so far.
Yeah, but so it's I think, just weird.
But that's my theory. It's like the next sales up was experimental. So he wanted to see if it went wrong, maybe.
He stood at the controls and not to the side so you can actually watch them.
If you're watching the controls, you might not be able to watch the experiment. Like, you know, I'm trying to help him out.
But then after it's done that and he walks away, he goes, oh, that's going to be a tough one for the repair squad to fix.
He means the rock stuck on the thing.
Yeah, you're the fucking engineer. You're the one who's going to have to dig him out of the transporter and rebuild the transporter.
Oh, yeah, he'll rebuild the transport. I think you just meant the maintenance. They can deal with those rocks stuck in the ceiling because I can't be fucked. I think he's just using them as dog's body. I actually thought it was really disrespectful to the maintenance people. It's like, ah, fuck them. They can do it. I could pick the transporter and beam them away, but...
It was almost like this. He was there, but the script was written for another character, and then...
I think
the chief engineer was asking the pilot how to fix it.
It's because you need to give Travis some lines every now and again. Because I think this is the most animated I've ever seen him.
Oh my god, he is the dullest character I think in the history of Star Trek. Has anyone got any competitors?
Probably. I mean, the only other ones, Reed. And they're both in this show. And Reed, I think, is a little bit better.
Yeah.
But I mean, not much.
It's like Reed, at least he's got a sort of interesting backstory and he does seem pretty good at his job. Whereas Mayweather.
See, we don't even Mayweather. Know his name.
Yeah, his only job is to go, gee whiz, we got to be part of that. Oh my God, a transporter. Oh, wow. Golly gee, and it's like that's just,
my dad so ran a big hauler, and I was born in space,
and I was once with a three-tittied woman. Like, I mean, that is a brag from the first episode. Before anyone thinks I'm being projected,
yeah. Well, this is it.
There's that another
all words. His character development is in the pilot, and then nothing for four seasons. It's anyway. He goes in a shuttle with Trip and lands on an asteroid this episode. So that's their subplot dealt with. Now we don't need to talk about that again. But yeah, once they get on the Vulcan ship, it is just pure horror film. It's we're in this corridor, the lights are flashing on and off, and then pretty soon we bump into zombie Vulcans. Who then block the escape route so they can't get back to the shuttle.
I mean, zombie, but super intelligent zombies, so they can operate things still?
Like, oh, yeah.
They can operate they can operate a bit, but
I mean, they're level for zombies.
We're in the post 28 days later world of zombies, where zombies can do stuff.
Do you think
you can't just have stupid zombies now?
That's what I was going to say. I was wondering if the implication, which just like, I mean, zombies is a very tenuous kind of way it works anyway. And then you say it's like, well, they're Vulcans, so they're zombies, but they can. They're kind of intelligent. It's like, it's.
Yeah, I mean, they're not.
It makes
they're
the
not...
thin theory even thinner. And zombies are great in films, but you don't go into the science too much. And I feel like this.
No, I mean, they're not actual zombies. The Vulcans who are afflicted by the thing.
Oh,
but I'm calling them zombies.
Yeah, I mean, it was a zombie allegory at least. And it just seems like
to be fair, also thought that we could have looked at Cat's Paw as the other horror movie. That horror episode from
The other thing I was going to ask you, I mean, it was also the kind of like look of them, I thought wasn't great. I mean, I didn't really like this one, to be honest with you. I didn't rate it too much, but I didn't think they looked that good either. And it's like, I was thinking it's like, a lot of the time we'll say, oh, well, for the time though, probably like the TV wasn't that clear, but it's like, what, 2004 maybe? And it's like, we had HD then at least.
We'll have had 1080 and stuff going on at the time, definitely. Yeah. And yeah, I mean, I don't think they look bad, and I think the lighting does them a few favours.
Yeah, I thought they looked
and the
all
thing,
right.
The thing with this episode is, I had loads of fun with it, but there's very little to it. There's not even a lot of dialogue for the most of the episode. It's just running around, shooting zombies, getting chased by zombies. And
the macro don't want to have stun anymore.
Yeah.
Stun's hardly affecting them. Can we start just phasing them and killing them?
Yeah.
I mean, I also would have liked...
And Archie goes, no, you can't go around phasing them, killing them, because I want to blow them all up.
Yeah.
Because also... like,
pretty much, yeah.
Again, I am aware they're not zombies, but it was the bit at the end as well. Like, it just made me think of like all the way through, they're grunting and everything. And then suddenly, like, it seemed like the most complex thing they'd done was at the end. But I was thinking, it's like, well, I mean, the whole ethos of zombies, the way it works is like you've lost all your high brain functions, you just can move and you act on instinct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But if they're saying they've got some intelligence, why don't they have any language? It was weird. Like, surely, why would that bit be?
Because they're using the Vulcan telepathy.
Fuck it. Okay, I'll give you that. Damn it. I don't know what I'm grumpy about. I just didn't like
this. As Jim said, do not try to work out zombie science because it will never make sense.
No. Actually, Jim just did a really pretty good job. Actually, like they in their past, it's possible that once they didn't talk at all and they just used telepathy.
There you go.
No, then it works. I don't know why I'm so annoyed. I just didn't like this episode. It's just, I want to get at it, I think. Probably the makeup wasn't that bad. It just seemed to me because I wasn't enjoying it, you know?
Yeah, probably. As I say, I had fun with it as just a little action movie. I quite enjoyed it.
I quite enjoyed it. It was
but
like,
as a result of that...
Like, let's be honest here. Like, when we did our time travel thing, we had to cover quite a bit of season 3.
Oh, yes.
And there's a lot of really bad episodes in season 3. This was actually a high point.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, I mean, in all fairness, I mean, I was quite tired when I was watching it. I've been sorting loads of stuff out for Mum's house. So it's like, it probably hit me at the wrong moment for an okay episode. It probably seemed worse than it was. And I wasn't paying as much attention as I might have done.
Yeah.
In fairness, I will admit I'm being probably a bit harsh from it, but
the thing is there's not a lot more to talk about because it is not just action sequences basically
they're in the expanse, they find the expanse affects Vulcans and turns them into zombies because of reasons. They find the Vulcan ship, so they go try and rescue them. They're already turned to zombies. DePaul starts changing into a zombie. They get her back. They blow up the Vulcans to fly away.
Yep, that's it.
So are we saying it was quite a short road getting from there to here?
It was a short road on this one. Very short. I mean, the I think we've already sort of touched on it. It's probably the most notable character thing is at the end, you have Archer say to Poloff as well, just maroon me on a planet because I don't want to endanger the crew. And it's like, yeah, there's only one of you, to be fair. If you did go full on zombie, it wouldn't take long to deal with you. But never mind. But Archer's like, no, I won't leave anyone behind. And that doesn't provide a contrast with where his character arc goes. Notably, though, this is one of, if not the first episode that Terry Matalas worked on, who obviously went on to do Picard seasons 2 and 3. So it's an interesting sort of first for Trek. And yeah, I think that is, there's a good sequence where they've got to get across that chasm and fight off the zombies at the same time. And then like, they put a thing over it to walk across it, and then they push it down so the zombies can't get back.
There's lots of good action in it. It's just lots of action, running away from zombies, shooting zombies, running away from zombies, shooting zombies.
And that's it. That's the thing. Like, you know, anyone who listens to the podcast knows we like to talk about the characters and character interactions and story beats and things like that. Whereas when all we're getting is a pretty well done action episode, not a lot to talk about.
It was a fun, enjoyable episode to watch, but there's not a huge amount to it.
It's not going to trouble anybody's top tens, is it, really? But what's more interesting is when they get back to Earth at the start of season 4, I think the episode's called Home, Archer sort of has to answer for this, and the Vulcans have a right go at him, and they're like, oh, so you blew up the Vulcan ship, did you, you bastard? Which is good fun. But yeah, I think that's about all there is for that. So yeah, another comment from Rose.
We'll still be
what will happen once Lower Decks finishes? Yeah, we will still be here.
Well, but once Lower Decks finishes, we won't have long to wait for the Section 31 movie.
Very true.
Is it 24th of January that's due out?
Something like that, yeah.
When we don't have new Trek, we're going to do the Sons of Moog.
Decided to do the Klingon
because we really enjoyed last week talking about them.
And we've talked ourselves enough with shit episodes in the past. We're going to give ourselves a break.
When we did an hour and a half episode last week out of the blue because we were talking about the Sons of Moog.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, I think also, I don't know exactly when Lower Decks finishes, but I think it might turn into a Klingon Christmas. Like, this might be our Klingon Christmas present.
It might well be the Klingon Christmas. It could be a Klingon
Christmas. Yeah, which would be nice.
Yeah, so we'll look forward to that. We'll wrap up there then for this week. We will be back next week with the next episode of Lower Decks. Oh, and speaking of Christmas, Rose has reminded us 35 days it's Christmas and 42 days it's New Year. Are we ready for the chaos?
No.
Always. Always.
Actually, yes, I have already sent my Secret Santa out for my model club.
There you go, you see. I've got most of my presents. They're all over there. They're going to get wrapped at some point.
I haven't bought any
And yeah. So
I've sort of been busy making my mum's house functional for her.
There you go.
I'll get to Christmas shopping. It's on my list.
It will get done.
It will
get done.
I'm going to be very blokey and do it all kind of last minute, probably. Like, it'll certainly be December anyway.
Yes. So in the meantime, you can get in touch with us. We're retrekpod@gmail.com. We're all over the various different social medias, including Retrek Model Studios on YouTube.
Watch your back catalogue till I get moved and can start building.
Which is hopefully going to be very soon. So,
and I'm going to say it, I'm going to get Blue Sky done by next week because I've got mine sorted out and I've seen where you do it on the app today. So
there we go. Then we will be on Blue Sky. And what have we got going on the Dr. Squeeze show?
Well, yeah, you and me talking about Twin Peaks Return. So we covered the first six episodes last week, which fucking hell. I mean, Twin Peaks always batshit. This is it at its batshittest, the most. And we've got an episode which, so we did six episodes at a time. So it's in three parts. We're doing the return. Mm-hmm. And then the next trench of episodes, you've got the most fucked up episode of Twin Peaks ever. So if you enjoy Twin Peaks, join us for that. It's a good time we're having to talk about those episodes.
That'll be fun. Yeah.
That, oh, sorry. Monday at 6 o'clock, I think we're going again.
It's the most fucked up episode of television ever, not just Twin Peaks. And that includes every episode of Love Island. It's even worse, you know, it's even more fucked up than all that. No, I know. I was making a cheap joke. Anyway, so yes, thank you for trekking with us this time, and we will see you next time on the retrek.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Brains, Dragon!